Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are all here with me today. We've got a wonderful show with a fascinating guest who I really want to bring on. But first, of course, I have my blog post a couple of years ago. And actually, I think this blog post is pretty apropos for what we're going to talk about today. So let's get into it. This blog post is entitled, Exploring the Depths Inside of Us is the Greatest Adventure of All. There are many places to explore in this world, and there are lots of other worlds to explore as well. It is part of human nature to want to explore. We are fascinated by what we don't know. Humans are driven to always learn about what is not yet understood. There's so much still to explore in our world. The depths of the oceans, the hidden jungles, the layers of history buried beneath our feet. Yet there is still one great unknown that we are intensely interested in exploring even more. That is the mystery of our own consciousness. For what greater depths are there than our own psyche, our own mind? It is still a mystery how our consciousness even came to be. We seek to understand ourselves on such a deep level so we can make sense of the world around us, to find our place in the universe. And most importantly, to understand our pain and suffering. There are so many theories and so many assumptions. We are constantly bumping up against their limits and want to understand even deeper truths. Where was our consciousness before we were born? And where does consciousness go when we die? We see life all around us, yet we don't know if any of it is conscious the way we are. We get confused by all we see in our life. And that drives us to want to understand ourselves better. Not only do we want to understand our place in the world, we want to explore why we show up in the world the way we do. Why do we pick the partners we do? How do we deal with the pain we have felt since we were children? What can we do to feel better about ourselves? These kinds of questions motivate us to want to understand our inner working on a truly personal level, as well as wanting to understand human beings as a whole lot better. Our motivations, our hopes and dreams, our frailties and our faults, it all drives us to explore our consciousness anew and sometimes ancient ways. To stop and just sit and be with ourselves so we can see ourselves more clearly. Sure, we sometimes don't want to see what's there. The fear of truly seeing our tortured souls can be formidable. It takes someone with a strong heart or with strong pain to continue on this path of exploration. Yet it can be the most rewarding path of all, to truly know oneself and be present to all of our internal struggles and visions. To look at ourselves naked in the mirror and accept ourselves as being imperfectly human does not come easily. Yet we keep at it and we keep walking down the path to greater understanding. There are worlds to explore inside of us as well as outside of us. Which worlds we decide to explore is entirely up to us. Perhaps when we've truly explored our own depths, we will be able to explore the depths of the universe in peaceful harmony. So are you ready to explore your own internal depths? So I wrote this a couple of years ago, and I remember speaking with someone, and they were asking me, like, you know, what did you want to be when you grow up? And for me, I always wanted to be an astronaut. Actually, that was like the only thing that held my interest. A child of the Star Trek generation, and just the allure of exploring outer space and discovering new worlds and strange forms of life and things like that. I mean, that was just so cool to me. And in this conversation, they kind of pointed out, like, oh, well, I guess you're learning to explore inner space instead of outer space. Like, yeah, I guess so. And that kind of, got me thinking about, especially I've been seeing so many interesting theories and people talking about the nature of the universe and the role that consciousness plays in the universe. And, some people even talking about how consciousness had to have pre-existed in order for the universe to form, and all kinds of things like that. We'll discuss it with our guest today. I'm sure he has something to say on this. But so this blog post just kind of poured out of me, because and look, I like to travel as much as the next person. My wife loves to go see different parts of the world. I think we all do. And it just, I realized that exploring what's going on inside of us, the complexity, the intricacy, the interconnectedness of everything inside of us is as equally a fascinating exploration as the external exploration. And so that's really what this blog post is all about. And I'm sure it might speak to some of you, it might not. But I kind of feel, especially in today's world where there's so much confusion, so much disorientation in a way, so much changing so rapidly, so quickly, things going in a direction that many people don't feel comfortable with and that just doesn't feel right. It seems to me the more we learn to map our own inner terrain, our own inner landscape, the more we get to understand ourselves, the more we understand others, the more we understand the world around us. So that's my blog post. It's entitled "Exploring the Depths Inside of Us is the Greatest Adventure of All." And of course, you can always find my blog on talkradio.nyc/blog and on my personal branded website of theconsciousconsultant.com. I come out with a new one every Monday, so come check it out. All right. Well, now it is my extreme pleasure to welcome to the show ER doctor, assistant professor of medicine, psychedelic researcher, sound meditation and breathwork facilitator, Dr. William Berg. Raised as a Buddhist, Dr. Berg has married his long-standing meditation practice with his medical career in the ER of a lower Manhattan hospital. His experiences have honed his focus on empathy, joy, and presence in his practice. He discovered a unique approach to meditation in 2020 using harmonic tones from various instruments like singing bowls and gongs to achieve deep meditative states. This approach, combined with his own practices of breathwork, visualization, and loving kindness, offers a transformational experience he's eager to share. When the COVID crisis hit, Dr. Berg saw firsthand how important his approach could be as he offered small meditation sessions to his colleagues, helping them find peace and quiet their minds amidst the chaos. The result was a profound positive effect on everyone involved, enabling them to tap into their inherent goodness under the most intense stress. Welcome, Dr. Burke, to the Conscious Consultants Hour.
Sam, thank you so much. That introduction was so perfectly leading into this, and I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, it's so funny. I'm like, literally, I'm just taking these blog posts in order week by week, and they somehow always seem to align with my guests so perfectly.
The alignment is perfect. It's psychedelic day, World Psychedelic Day. It's the summer solstice.
Solstice,
We're here. I'm excited to dig into
Beautiful,
to this
beautiful. Yes, me as well. Me as well. I would love to just get a little bit more on your background. Someone by the name of William Burke, you don't think of as a Buddhist too often. So,
It's actually, it's a, there was a, essentially, my parents are British military backgrounds, really not spiritual at all. And from, let's say, from the years about 4 to 10, they had a Shaivist exploration. And Shaivism is a type of non-dual Hinduism. It's fascinating and I think apropos to all of this. And then from about 12 to 15, they had a Buddhist phase. And so I was raised meditating, breath, consciousness, all of these sort of things ingrained into my childhood. And I would say during college, medical school, I sort of left them behind and rediscovered them in residency and then onward in my career.
And where were you raised? Were you raised here in New York?
Raised in New York City and
Okay.
in Connecticut.
In Connecticut. Gotcha. Yeah, because it's not, I mean, I've met many people who discovered Buddhism in their life later on and adopted its practices and philosophy. But it's not too common that I hear of people being raised in that kind of environment, which I find fascinating.
It's interesting as a child to learn how to meditate. I would say I came up with some my own sort of childish understandings of it that have evolved, but it was really cool to have that as a
I'm curious, like, did the other kids tease you or make fun of you because of it, or were they like fascinated, or did you
it
just not tell
was
them?
I didn't really share too much. We went to these ashram retreats during the weekends. And I came back and no one was the wiser.
But I mean, there must have been something, because that I'm sure it gave you a certain calmness as a child that other children didn't necessarily have. Did people like notice, like, hey, check out William, he's kind of cool on Monday, that's unusual.
I think I was just the normal kid, but I would say
Okay.
that there were moments where if I got in trouble or there was something really tumultuous happening, I was able to meditate and bring that in. And I did get in trouble relatively frequently, so
Okay, so then you were a very normal kid. Awesome.
I think so, yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about the getting into the sound healing and
Yeah.
then how you applied it during COVID, because I know, because I talked to many people during those early days of what a crazy thing it was to be a medical practitioner, especially being an ER doctor. I mean, God, I'm sure your practice served you well. So I want to get into all of that to start with,
For sure.
and then we'll get into from there other stuff. And I do see loyal listener Patty tuning in from wherever she is in her travels. She always travels around a lot. Thank you for tuning in, Patty. I really appreciate you being such a loyal listener. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern, right here on talkradio.nyc and all over social media. And you can always find us on all the podcasting platforms. And we'll be right back with our guest, Dr. William Burke, in just a moment.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. Dr. Burke, so you're an ER doctor. You've been working as an ER doctor for a while. Something very unexpected happens. We have a pandemic, our first pandemic of our lifetime. I mean, there have been pandemics before, but the first in our lifetime. How did that affect you, and what got you to kind of, you know, find these other skills of sound healing and sort of develop your spiritual practice in that process?
Yeah. I think it's an answer that deserves a bit of a preamble.
Okay.
In medical school, you're really taught that, you know, all things are really material problems. You're taught that the world is solvable, that you know, each patient is sort of a problem to be solved and overcome and move through, and really look at yourself more of as a machine than anything else. You're working 30 hours, you're not encouraged to be empathetic, you're encouraged to move faster, to be more efficient, to be more precise. And coming into COVID, that was sort of where we were all coming from. We all wanted to make sure that everyone was taken care of, that we could move this volume, and not really bringing too much awareness to the way that our hearts were being affected by the volume of death, the volume of isolation and loneliness. You know, during those first months, patients were dying without their families. People were coming in so scared, and just the weight of the pain, the weight of, you know, not having a place to put the bodies, the weight of not having PPE, you know, it was heavy, and none of us had the skills to move that kind of energy. None of us even really had the skills to take care of ourselves. So yeah, it got really dark. And I would say just in my own journey, it got really dark. I tried to hoard as much money as I could in hopes that would make me happy. I tried any number of things to make myself feel safe. And I would say maybe a year into the pandemic, I found sound meditation. And as opposed to some of the more Vipassana-based meditation with breath or walking as the focus of attention, sound was really incredible in the way it drew you in and the way it held you. It felt transcendent almost immediately. And I was getting so much out of it that I got some instruments and I started playing for my staff. And as sort of the doctor, the head doctor in an ER, I have 4 or 5 other medical people working for me, then maybe 10 nurses, and then plenty of ancillary staff. And as the guy in the center, I was really able to see where people were suffering, or if one of my staff was just at the end of their rope, and I was able to take them out, you know, just for 2 or 3 minutes, play a little sound, do a little breath. And it turned that sort of pain, that thing that may have festered for a while, that burnout that would have made it hard for them to achieve the next, you know, to see the next patient, to do what they need to do. It really transmorphed that into something that was beautiful. And even that moment that they were cared for, they could pass on to the patient. And in so doing, we created a really a beautiful environment. And that was, yeah, that was an incredible practice for me, just to know that, yeah, caring for someone can have a huge impact, not only on that person, but on me and on the rest of the patient.
Yeah, that's beautiful, because I've talked to ER nurses and ER doctors around that time, and just the level of burnout and the level of trauma, I'll say, was just so massive, because we were so completely psychologically unprepared for it.
Yeah. I mean, I worked at Elmhurst in Queens, which is the, you know, in based on some documentation, one of the worst hit places. And, you know, the sad part is that, you know, as COVID started to die down, or to the way we talked about it started to recede, people were still really affected, and they really held those scars, and there was no way to move that energy. And so even now I do some occasional burnout prevention sort of retreats, little two or three hour retreats, where we give people the chance to just talk about those times, you know, because the world's moved on. Yeah. But you know, without being able to process those experiences and emotions, you can't move on. Right. So just giving people the forum to talk about it in a conscious way is valuable.
I've even seen it in some of the gatherings that I've been to, that people are still learning to be comfortable being in a group of people again. That still there's this little bit of unconscious anxiety on a very low level that, like, either people don't know how, or they're nervous about doing it. And it's not a conscious thing. It's not a rational thing. It's just sort of the shock from the whole thing.
Yeah. And I mean, even more so when it's your, a lot of your life is spent in the same place. So.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm curious about sort of how your spiritual practice has sort of affected what you do and sort of the things you're interested in. Because one of the reasons I was excited to bring you on today is because of your interest in and research on the world of psychedelics and how that is shifting and changing. It's a very dynamic landscape right now. And I'm wondering how that spiritual practice kind of feeds into all of that.
Yeah, it's a huge and ever-evolving question. I was raised, again, as a Shaivist, and the basic tenet of Shaivism is that, let's say God existed for eternity. Mm-hmm. An eternity of bliss and omniscience and pleasure and everything, full knowing, full existing, eventually would get boring. Yeah. And the concept in Shaivism is that at some point, God would want an experience that's not fully under God's control. And an experience of duality, or an experience of being limited. And in so doing, God incarnated as you, to have the experience that you are having right now. And it's almost, they call it Leela. They call it the play. This is God's, you are God's play. And essentially the idea is that in any good movie or in any good play, you need drama. And that drama is the pain and suffering of your life. And if there is a purpose to life, it's to accepting all that comes in as freely as you can, as godly, as thank you for this experience that I'm having, because I know I'm not just this limited being. I know I'm so much more than that. Mm-hmm. And I would say that, you know, the mystical experience mirrors that, perhaps the experience of knowing that, in fact, you are one with everything. This is oftentimes the what people pull out of it, that you are everything. You are more than just this physical, limited, you know, being that has their own foibles and neuroses, but that you're so much more. And so I would say that in my work with patients, that people are really able to grasp that understanding in more than an intellectual way, in a way that really speaks to them and they're able to carry into their lives. And once you know that you're deeply, fully connected with others, that you're more than just this thing, you know, the problems of the world are a little less heavy.
Yeah. And it's interesting, like the way you describe Shaivism, there's a little similarity to like Kabbalism. Like in the Kabbalah, and they talk about the formation of the universe, it's a similar thing of like God emptying out this other piece and creating this multiplicity that's really just to experience the infinite possibilities of coming back to awakening.
So I think it's a similar idea in many, you know, in the idea of Buddhism and reincarnation. I think a lot of people are excited about this idea.
Yeah, many mystical traditions.
What I'm really excited, if I may, there's a therapy practice called IFS, Internal Family Systems, that I'm in the middle of a certification for, but I've been receiving for many years. And the concept for the listeners is that we are made up of multiplicity of parts, and those parts take action on our behalf and are trapped in certain roles. And gaining access to those parts and giving them compassion, love, forgiveness, and understanding is what really frees us up from our knee-jerk reactions, our anger, our pain. And so applying that to the psychedelic experience as well has been foundational.
Yeah. I know a lot of people in the psychedelic world that they look towards somatic stuff. So things like somatic experiencing or EMDR and IFS, this idea of learning to see each of our parts and bring more light to it, like bringing a greater awareness, a greater consciousness to them, so that they're not driving the bus, but we bring them along for the ride.
Yeah, they are the bus.
Right, they are the bus.
We're driving the bus, and they are the bus, perhaps.
Right, exactly. All right, I really want to get into the what's going on in the psychedelics industry and your perspective on it. But we just got to take our next break. So when we come back, let's get into it. Let's talk about, you know, what's going on in the industry overall with Colorado and Oregon legalizing psilocybin, ketamine being a legalized psychedelic, and where, you know, the impact you see and where you see things going. Okay.
Great.
Awesome. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. Our guest this hour is Dr. William Burke, and we will be right back in just a moment.
Hey, everybody. It's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on talkradio.nyc.
Were you an essential worker during the pandemic? If you needed to learn stages of epilepsy, did you depend on advocates? Did you use new innovations to cope with mental and neurological issues? Maintaining high quality of life and keeping good mental health are what we all strive for. I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each week, top healthcare influencers, professionals, and innovators answer these questions and more. Stay tuned on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on Talk Radio.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, Our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
NYC, and I will continue to be frank about health with all of you.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I see we have a comment on our YouTube channel from John Fagan. He loves IFS, and he says he loves Dr. Burke. So you've got a fan out there. tell me, what sparked your interest in psychedelics?
I would say that a lot of people, and myself included, are sort of tired of the concept of our existence merely as a material, all we're here to do is reproduce. I think that comes up feeling really empty and excited about the promise of deepening my understanding of my own existence.
Gotcha. And now people are calling it like a psychedelic renaissance, right?
Mm.
It's this rediscovering of it. There's a lot going on in the industry.
Yeah.
What's your perspective of why is this happening now? And where do you see things kind of going with what's happening? I mean, there was a vote by a panel for the FDA actually not recommending MDMA get approved. Though I've heard various perspectives on what they actually wrote than just the vote, so some people are still pretty positive about it. What's going on right now? What's happening with all of this?
I don't think it's a coincidence that this moment we're having in the psychedelic world is counterbalanced with this despair in the mental health world. The most prescribed medication in the United States is first blood pressure and second antidepressants and third antipsychotics. Wow. It's really sad. And I think a lot of people are feeling hopeless, feeling tired of the Western model of prescribe some drugs, maybe you can get in to see a therapist, perhaps go through years of therapy. A lot of people are just feeling really like there needs to be a new system or at least something that can really speak to them, and really help them. And so the promise of psychedelics, the research that's been done, the history, we were talking a little bit before about Roland Griffith, the grandfathers like Ram Dass, Terence McKenna. To see them speak, to see them really embody the lessons of this is so much more beautiful evidence that these really can change people's lives and do so in a relatively easeful way when compared to years of therapy or not that that's not important, but so it does seem to me that we are coming into this in the most important, perfect moment, because I would say humanity is a bit at a tipping point, if it's ever been at one, in terms of falling off into disconnection, fear, isolation, and anger, hatred, you know.
The polarization that's happening right now is
exactly
so extreme.
Exactly.
And you know, myself, having, you know, been a child of the 70s and tried all kinds of stuff when I was in high school, and then not doing anything for a longest time, and then kind of coming back to it in a facilitated, guided, sacred way, it made a huge impact on my life, and is really very different. And this is not the idea of taking ecstasy in the 80s to go to a rave and dance all night long. Like these very powerful substances are really being used to help with addiction, PTSD, especially some of the most severe PTSD, like with veterans. I know there are some there are some veteran groups that they actually will go overseas to where they can do it legally, like in Amsterdam, and have a tremendous recovery rate.
Yeah, in terms of PTSD recovery, I think the rates of use of psilocybin and MDMA in isolation are far higher. I don't remember the numbers, but way higher and longer lasting than any therapeutic or pharmacologic modality on the market. Ketamine is legal in all 50 states, and one dissociative dose of ketamine decreases suicidality by 50%. So there's a study at NYU going on right now, yet to be published, but studying essentially people coming in saying they want to hurt themselves, getting one dose of ketamine, and half of them can be cleared to go home rather than multi-week stays in a psych ward. And so I think we are, now that the narrative has changed, you know, you mentioned the 70s, people taking handfuls of LSD in a field, dropping out of school, counterculture. It's a different thing now. It's more about collective healing. It's more about conscious and really rigorous use of these modalities in a way that's meant to expand and open our hearts. And I think it's a different world now, more focused, more grounded. And I'm really excited about states like Colorado, Massachusetts, New York, legislating the use of legalized psychedelics so that we can do this in a way that isn't, you know, I always use this term, but it's not like, you know, a woo-woo shaman sort of character who you can't really say has your best interest in mind, perhaps your best interest in mind, but may not be trained in all the safety and all the all the background. And so it's exciting now that we can do this above ground, that you know, people like me could prescribe this with, you know, a good eye on your medical history and make sure it's safe. And
that's one important of the things that's really so important right now, is there are contraindications, right? Like, there are things where you need to be careful if you want to engage in this stuff. Like, if there's, you know, medical history of borderline personality and psychosis, like, you don't want to engage in this stuff. Or if you've already been treated using antidepressants and antipsychotics, there are contraindications with those medicines and some psychedelics. So, like, being mindful of where we are, like the whole situation, because we're not, you know, indigenous people living in a village in the middle of the Amazon where the village can take care of the person if they have some kind of spiritual emergence during a ceremony. You know, we live in a very different type of world, so we have to focus on different aspects of how to support people through this kind of a process. Oops, I think he froze. Let's give it a moment, see if he comes back. But yes, the internet being what it is, sometimes we freeze on these things. always happens when we do it. A quick thing, shout out to Patty. I see on the YouTube, she says, I just got invited to a psychedelic Facebook page. Not even trying it. I don't know what to expect. Well, Patty, we definitely should talk. Oh, and Dr. Burke dropped. Hopefully he'll get back on in a moment. Yeah, so there's one of the things, I mean, today being World Psychedelic Day and the solstice. Solstice is actually a day early. Usually it's on the 21st, but this year somehow our solstice is a little bit early. And let's see if Dr. Burke is coming back. But, you know, there is the much more attention being paid to what's going on. As Dr. Burke mentioned, ketamine, which was initially used as just an anesthetic, I mean, still used as an anesthetic, was found to have this sort of off-label use or be able to be used for not its originally approved purposes. So it was already legalized and then was able to come back.
Okay. There we are. So sorry about that.
No worries. No
I'm
worries.
Calling from the hospital, so it's always a bit tricky in here.
Yes.
Yeah, as you were saying, it's already FDA approved. So luckily enough, we don't have to go through a full FDA approval process. We can use it as an alternative use. So right. There's plenty of great research now for its use in treatment-resistant depression and...
So I'm curious from as a medical professional and knowing sort of things from inside the medical profession, what do you see as sort of what's happening with things like MDMA? You know, they're in the phase three trials. They're waiting to see if the FDA will approve it or not. But the panel, there's this panel vote that didn't recommend it because they felt the data wasn't quite good. Is the feeling like, whether it gets approved now or not, that this is moving forward, that they are going to find a way to, you know, get this into the hands of practitioners to be able to help people?
It was definitely a blow against the, you know, the hopes and dreams. And I think a lot of researchers and a lot of people in the psychedelic field had a sense that this was a sure thing. Yeah. You know, much in the way that I think Hillary supporters thought there's no way Trump could win. And, you know, unfortunately we get surprised sometimes. So there were some ethical concerns. There were some research concerns. There were some things that didn't get recorded that the FDA wanted. None of them are necessarily damning. But, you know, it's a sense of pushing this through a, unfortunately, a bureaucracy that's filled with older people that don't necessarily see the miraculous changes, and are just looking at the numbers, at the risks. And, so it seems rather likely that we may, have to wait another few years. Luckily, the, psilocybin, is getting pushed through on a state to state basis, much like cannabis was. Right. So we may have access to that a bit sooner.
Yeah. Okay, it's time for us to take our last break of the show. When we come back, I'd like to ask you about something personal you're going through. And how your spiritual practice kind of supports you, what you're going through in a way that makes it a little bit easier, perhaps. Okay?
Yeah.
Sure. All right. So everyone, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Dr. William Burke, and we will be right back to finish it up in just a moment.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back. You know, Dr. Burke, I mentioned to you before the show how when I was at the Psychedelic Sciences Conference in Denver, that one of the most moving parts for me was seeing Roland Griffiths, you know, a real elder in the industry, talking about him facing his imminent demise when he found out he had stage 4 cancer, and he's since passed. And to see how he was able to talk about it with such poise and such presence as a result of him. I mean, he was 25 years at least a meditator, meditating every day. You have your own little challenge you're facing, don't you?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. And for the listeners, this came up because Sam mentioned that I was calling in from the hospital, and I'm actually a patient here at the hospital. I'm having open heart surgery next week. And it's a wild story. In 2018, when I was a resident at Mount Sinai, I actually found an abnormality in my aorta, just messing around doing ultrasounds for practice, echocardiograms on myself. And we had been monitoring it for years, and then this year found that it's really too big and that it needs to be replaced with a graft. And I'm no Roland Griffith, but it has been a journey, and the journey of facing mortality was really what was so exciting for me to begin with. Reminding myself that I don't get to take this body home, reminding myself that this is a finite experience, that I will die. And as I told people, you know, they were really shocked and showed a lot of sympathy, and I found myself relatively triggered by how much sympathy. I was like, oh, you know, I might die. And realizing that maybe in reminding myself all the time that I was going to die, I might manifest something that I don't want to manifest.
Yes.
So it's been a really interesting moment now of recognizing how lucky am I that I discover this, that I get to live, that I get to, you know, take this moment of forced sort of calmness, forced quietness, and really be with myself and what comes up. And it's been an absolute funhouse of emotions.
I'm wondering, do you use your singing bowls or your instruments to do some sound therapy on yourself when you get a little triggered?
For sure. And some friends have offered. I think what's been more beautiful for me, we mentioned the IFS, was mm-hmm. as I feel an emotion, really allowing myself to feel that, not pushing anything away, really getting to know the emotion of fear, really getting to know the emotion of sadness, of anger, getting to know the emotion of really whatever comes up. And And when I can show presence, when I can say, thank you, anger, thank you, fear, thank you, sadness, those emotions start to become friends and signposts rather than things that I can't face or things that I have to push away, enemies even.
Yeah. I'm really curious because through my coaching practice and my wife, I mentioned, is a psychotherapist, it's usually the most challenging for us to feel those difficult emotions, the fear, the sadness, the pain. What is it, do you think, that really helped you and supported you in being able to face those difficult emotions and still be able to have a presence and still be like kind of basically okay? I mean, you seem pretty okay about them.
Yeah, I know. Actually, the surgeon is like, wow, you're pretty okay with this. Yeah, I think it's just allowing those emotions to breathe. You know, just like a child, if you tell the child who's yelling for you, yelling for your attention to shut up, it's going to yell louder. And if you allow yourself to fully feel, and it's not a pretty sight. I go into my room and I scream into a pillow and I bang it around and I cry and I writhe and I let it really embody me, let it take over my body and exist. And in so doing, it's like, oh, wow, you respect me, you listen to me. And so I don't need to bang down the door in order to let you know I'm here. And I'm like, yeah, I am scared. Yeah, I am sad. But because I allow sadness and I allow fear, it doesn't run the ship. It's not the way you would normally think about it. You're like, right. Oh, well, I have to avoid sadness, so I'm not sad. It's like, oh no, right, you actually have to be sad, so you're not sad.
Right. You actually have to allow it, the energy of that emotion, to fully come forward so that you can process it and release it so that you don't keep holding on to it.
Some people say emotion is energy in motion.
Yes.
And I think that's so true. You know, when you let an emotion move, yeah. It lets you, gives you that freedom.
So one of the, you know, big studies and one of the things they talk a lot about with psilocybin was the sort of end of life studies that they've done at Johns Hopkins and NYU about NYU. How like a high dose of psilocybin helps people to be okay with end of life. Like they did a lot with cancer patients and stuff. Why do you think that is? Like, what is it about that experience that helps people to be okay with the fact that, you know, like with Roland Griffiths, that they, you know, they're facing the end of their life? I mean, thankfully, you're going to have your operation. You're going to be fine. I'm going to send lots of white light. And
yeah, knock on some wood. Yeah.
Knocking wood. Burn
some sage. Yeah, it's an interesting question. And I actually see a lot of death as an ER doctor. And I would say that the people that recognize that there's something beyond themselves are the ones that can move gracefully into the next stage. And whether that's the people that believe in really whatever it is, believe that their family is well taken care of and that they've been a good, you know, let's say father, they know that they will be loved and remembered, or it's the people who after 5 grams of psilocybin recognize that they are God and they will never die, you know. So I would say that there's many ways to that. Meditation opens up a sense of belonging to everything, and once you have that sense, you know, Ram Dass said death is like taking off a tight shoe. Yeah. And even in this heart surgery thing, I spent a lot of time teaching myself that death is safe. I love that. Death is safe, you know, because ultimately you can't be hurt.
Yeah.
The real you.
Yeah. I've heard people talk about with certain psychedelics like Bufo, the quote unquote ego dissolution, that when you,
yeah,
have that experience of being at one with all that is, that it's actually a very ecstatic experience, that it's a beautiful experience. And one friend said to me, you know, after having that experience, I don't understand why we're all so afraid of death. It's actually a beautiful thing.
And I think ketamine mimics that experience as well, that sense of letting go and being outside of your body. And it's funny, people in the mushroom space often describe that experience as being more real than their lived experience. I'm sure that the people coming out of those experiences are not trying to die. I don't think that we're saying that, but certainly perhaps a little more at peace and a little more curious as to what comes next.
Well, Dr. Burke, thank you so much for taking
time to come on
the show. It's been a pleasure to meet you. I would love to, after your very successful heart surgery, when you recover, I would love to get together and meet you in person. Since
I'd love that too.
Since you're a fellow New Yorker. So I wish you all the best.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Should I give out your website? So if anyone wants to learn more about him, his website is www.williamburkemd.com. And we'll make sure that's in the show notes. So thank you all for tuning in. Thank you, Dr. Burke. And thank you, my loyal listeners. I see we got plenty of comments on the YouTube channel. Thank you for commenting. And just a quick announcement. We have an old show coming back on the network. I'm so thrilled that my dear friend Elizabeth Tripp is returning to the network after many years to reprise her show, Nourish the Soul. She'll be starting her show on July 9th at 7 p.m. I hope you all will tune in for that. Thank you all. Take care. We will talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.
Uplift, educate, empower.
Were you an essential worker during the pandemic? If you needed to learn stages of epilepsy, did you depend on advocates? Did you use new innovations to cope with mental and neurological issues? Maintaining high quality of life and keeping good mental health are what we all strive for. I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each week, top healthcare influencers, professionals, and innovators answer these questions and more. Stay tuned on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will continue to be frank about health with all of you.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business, or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your Conscious Consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Branku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays. where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.